That Harney story is a hell of a story.
I mean, the truth.
It's unfortunate that last year, right? You know, it didn't work out. That he had a great run for a while there. It is time now for Marsh Hallberg's. Marsh Hallberg from Hallberg Criminal Defense. HallbergDefense.com. For Marsh's Sports Law segment on 105 The Ticket, brought to you by Smart Start MN Ignition Interlock Systems. If you need to drive, they can help. Before the break, Marsh, I asked, this will go to an arbitrator in likelihood, the penalty on Tom Brady and the Patriots. But in the case of Brady, if his representation decided to do what Adrian Peterson did and take it to a courtroom, can the NFL subpoena or ask to see his, can he be forced to turn his phone over?
Really good question. It's, again, like anything in law, there's, you know, two lawyers a question, get five answers. But I think that would happen that they would do that, because if Brady's the one saying, look, this is excessive, I didn't do anything wrong, it's a bad investigation, it's sloppy, it's biased, whatever, they say, well, okay, you're making that claim, we have the right to defend ourselves, and therefore we have the right to look at all the evidence on this, and it's logical to assume that a couple of assistant, you know, tall boys aren't the ones that are doing this kind of thing without somebody higher up saying it. So they would get the subpoena issued by the court, and then the Brady's attorneys would typically bring what's called a motion to quash. They'd go into court and say, we shouldn't have to do this. It's confidential. It's private. Everything else. I think at the end of the day, the court would actually do that. So that's a discussion.
Oh, you think the court would say, no, you don't have to turn it over?
No, they say you do have to turn it
over.
Okay. Yeah. They would say you do have to turn it over. And I think that's the discussion Brady would be having with his PR people as well as his lawyers, because if he barks and pushes us like, you know, AP did, and it got to that point, and then a court ordered him to do it, and rather than do it, he would dismiss his case, everybody's going to again assume that you aren't doing that because there's bad evidence there for you. They'll try to argue, as they have so far, they'll claim that the reason he hasn't turned it over, he doesn't want to set precedent for NFL getting into the records of players whenever there's a dispute. So he's doing it for other people, not for himself. This is a noble cause, he argues.
Yeah, that's a very very noble cause that they've got going there. Now, also, could you, because some people may not be aware of this, doesn't matter if he deletes the text, they're there, right? The phone companies have them. Yeah. Now, can someone at the phone company who's a Patriot fan go in and erase them? That would be a mistake.
No, again, texts are a lot tougher than emails to recover. But a lot of times, again, you can get it, as he did in this case, at least you're getting part of that discussion from the other person you're going back and forth with. And there are programs out there. I've had cases where you'll have parents that'll put programs on their kids' phones to track all of the text messages and emails. And they'll be able to, that then is stored.
So wait a minute, is it possible they could be lost if he deleted them?
Yeah.
And oh, I thought that there was a record of them with phone companies.
They could. They're not going to get a lot of that stuff, because it's not like emails, which is a lot cleaner to get that. Again, I'm not an expert like this, but generally my experience has been emails is going to be a lot easier than texts are going to be to recover that stuff.
Oh, so maybe he could be in the clear on this, because you know he deleted them.
But you wonder what, again, they obviously didn't get it all, because otherwise they'd have stronger bantering back and forth between the two assistants and him. They have some stuff, obviously, that causes issues.
That's interesting. Hey, we have Chad with a question for you. Chad from Blaine. Chad, how are you?
Good, guys. Hey, Marsh.
Hey, Chad.
I know you're one of the top attorneys in the Twin Cities, so what would you do if Tom Brady hired you? I mean, would you sit idly by, or would you say what that attorney said and then have everybody call you an idiot?
Yeah, right. What an idiot. I think what he should be doing is talking about, I would say, the issue, we're still denying we did anything wrong, but just like the Patriot team is saying, we're going to take some punishment here just to move on with our lives, so I'm doing this more to move on with my life. The spin I would then take is, this isn't about whether I did or not. The question is what's consistent and what's fair. You know, if I can, beat my girlfriend in a elevator and initially get two games, or I can do some of these other penalties that have gotten a tap on the wrist, I'm getting this for a real questionable violation. That's going to be the spin they're going to put there. We don't think it's that bad. So I think the argument I would take here, Chad, is to say we're looking for consistency, which Goodell has suffered from the beginning. On the, you know, you look at the 5, 6, 10 cases as Goodell has handled here in the last year or two, and how all over the map they've been, or the process they've done. So that's how I think I'd package it.
Is he just throwing doubt in the air to in the appeal process?
He's just, and again, we do that as attorneys sometimes too, because you don't want people to really think about the real issues, so you get them trying to talk about something else, a red herring that you do. So here he's trying to say, the issue isn't whether my client cheated. The issue is whether, the NFL is being fair or excessive. You know, and we'll just and that's more fashionable. You know, so many people love Brady because of his skills and his looks and all that stuff. So we'll make it somebody easier to hate, which is just this faceless NFL or Goodell or somebody else.
Well, now Marsh, if you were Tom Brady as representation, wouldn't you be emboldened by the Adrian Peterson outcome by going to court and basically the court siding with you? Wouldn't you feel you have you want to skip the arbitration if you could? It's a necessary thing you have to go through, but I would think there's a very good chance, or it's almost a slam dunk, he's going to court.
Well, yeah, and I think
if it doesn't go his way with the arbitrator,
I think, and that, true on the face of it, I think the AP case, you say, look, this is better for him. But the problem I think you players are going to be having is the longer this goes by and the cement starts to set, that we have these new rules in place that it's discretionary. This isn't what it was before. And one of the arguments I think against people saying, look, look what happened to people in the past. They only got a slap on the wrist. Well, it ain't like it used to be. For most of us in life, life's different now than it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years, whatever. Times change and penalties change. And just there's a whole new set of rules. We're going to be a lot more, you know, sensitive to issues about, you know, women's rights and bullying and respecting gays in the locker room. And now it's the pressure of a ball. Although an argument can say it's very small, it's still cheating. And so cheating on every level is something that we are going to have zero tolerance for. So I think this is something that the NFL is going to continue to have a stronger and stronger hand in. And that's part of what AP's problem was. It wasn't about AP halfway through this case. It was about the NFL and the union fighting over precedent and procedures and who has the power.
Well, and I think that's a great point. I think the league made a good call by going with four games. I think it should be more, but I think if it was more, it could be knocked down. I think, yeah. Now we've had this discussion earlier. Do you think that's a number that, I think they picked that number because they feel they could justify it, whether an arbitrator or a court?
You and I have not talked about this, and that's exactly where I'm coming from on this. I think four is the magic number here. I think it should be more because this is
true. And I do too, yep.
It's an attempt to change the outcome of the game. And the fundamental basis of this sport and most sports is you don't know the outcome. It's supposed to be fair. Now, you can say this is stupid. Teams should be able to set the air amount they want in their own balls to whatever number they want. And there's a good argument, I think, for that to say, look, each team and each player has unique things. I don't tell you how tight to have your chin strap and how to do other things to, you know, make your equipment function for you. So same thing. If you want the ball this way, great. Another player wants another one. That's their deal because it's, you know, it's your offense is running on the field.
See, I don't think, and again, we're talking to Marsh Hallberg Criminal Defense. I don't think the league wants to be embarrassed again by having whether an arbitrator or a court change what their ruling was. And that's why I think from their standpoint, the four was a number that they feel they can, you know, as I said, justify. 6 to 8, which I think would have been, I said earlier, and I don't know if you had heard it. My feeling is that it was actually excessive to the Patriots, not the million. I mean, the million's nothing to a guy like Kraft and the team. But the first and fourth round draft pick, they took a bigger hit than Tom Brady did.
Oh, absolutely.
And I don't know that they should, but there's another thing that can be argued. Maybe because he's been in a culture of cheating and things that have happened with the Patriots before. And I know that our guy gets all upset about that. Is that him? Hello?
Charles and Moore.
Charles, how are you?
Hey there. I was just gonna say is, you know what, I agree on Tom Brady's situation. You know what, he should have gotten like 6 to 8. I think he got off light. For example, what if Minnesota did the same thing? But like, for example, what if Teddy Bridgewater was talking to like the people for the ball handling and that? So, and they would have probably gave him a lot more games.
Well, we had the guy calling earlier that was complaining that the Panthers and the Vikings were putting the football in front of a heater to keep it from getting like a rock. They were warned, but they weren't fined. The problem is, in the case of the Patriots, it's almost, this was beyond a warning because they'd been doing it more than one game. And I think that's what was I could almost understand that if you have some ball boys trying to heat the balls up, they tell them get them warm.
Right.
I could buy that was accidental, not these guys deflating footballs on purpose. Clearly, it was done on purpose.
And it's done in a very secretive way, too. You're taking it back into the bathroom or into whatever to do it. It's not like you're openly doing it out in front of everybody else.
The reason why they penalized the Patriots, too, was because I think they kind of gave them a little bit of a warning. You know what? You did the Spygate. You did the... Now the balls, this is probably something that's your show.
Yeah, that's a good point, because you got Spygate before. That's a real good point, I think.
Well, but I still go, because I'm not a Patriots lover, but I do think that in this case it should be looked at a bit separately if the owner and, particularly the coach, was unaware of it. I mean, he was aware of the Spygate thing, but he took the team has taken a hit, and so has Belichick because of what Brady did. But then I go back to what I started to say. Is it the culture that's been created there that you think you can get away with anything? Yeah. You're invincible because you're the Patriots.
Again, part of what you've got going here is that because we're in the new this new time, right, the new post, you know, Ray Rice AP time, these are the gold standards by which everything else is set.
Yep.
So if you, you smack a woman, we're going to look at what happened to Ray Rice. You hit a kid, we're going to look at AP. You do something like Deflategate thing, we're going to look at what happened here to Brady. So these are all, again, there's a lot of really smart people out there. They're thinking about this about 5 years from now, 10 years now, 20 years from now. They're going to be comparing things for disciplines. It's like, you look back to, people are talking about Paul Hornung and what happened with them and, you know, back in the 60s. And, you know, there's a long history to these. So there's a, this is a benchmark case. And the key is you are trying to alter your success through an unfair action. Was it a minor one? Maybe. Was it something that really didn't affect the outcome of the game? Probably, because they smoked them in the game anyway. But you were trying to cheat.
And that's the other thing to point
out. Nobody wants to use the cheat word. Nobody wants to use the cheat word, you know?
Don, you won't.
Yeah.
But that's the other thing, too, about this. It doesn't matter if he still had success and had big numbers with the football properly inflated. The point is he tried to get it underinflated in order to have a competitive advantage. And it could have been just psychologically thought it was better. Clearly he can throw a football, you know, when it's properly inflated. We've seen that.
Right.
We saw it in the Super Bowl. We saw it in the second half of the championship game.
Yeah. And you can't just do – what does Brady make a year? I don't even know what he makes. I
don't, it's got to be close to – well, I'm guessing is he as high as 20?
Yeah, 15.
Well, he took a little bit of a pay cut.
Yeah, 15-ish maybe.
Wait a minute, we could find that pretty
well,
quick.
You know, and you combine that, you know, his wife Giselle, you know what she made last year, Bob?
How much? Well, he, $2 million is what he's going to cost him. So
okay.
Just multiply that by, you know, by four.
Okay.
So he's making, well, he's making more than that.
Yeah.
He's got to be making more than $8 million a year.
No, I want to say his restructuring of his deal only paid him like $7.5 million in salary for
but there was
for
guaranteed
the
money that doesn't come into play.
Yeah, there's other stuff that's not
factored
part of the cap.
2016, his base salary is $8 million, but he had a $6 million signing bonus.
Okay.
The $6 million that counts against this year.
Got it.
For his cap hit is $14 million.
So I mean that, and you throw in his wife this last year, $47 million she made in 1 year for getting her picture taken. Sign me up for that gig. $168 million they figure her gross revenue has been just in modeling alone.
I bet you'd get it too. You know, here's the thing.
I'll charge less than that.
Well, yeah.
People can take pictures of me whenever they want. Less than $47 million.
You have a face for radio though, but you've been told that a lot.
You know what'd be great though? That he's been a well, we don't know how he handles his finances. Maybe he could be, you know, just spend the money like crazy. Those 4 weeks, Giselle, can I have some money? I need to go to the store and get a Coca-Cola. he needs spending money from Giselle.
Yeah, I read something about some Manhattan apartment that they have. It rents for I think it was $36,000 a month was the rent for this place.
That's nothing to her.
No, it was $36,000 a month. That was unfurnished, of course. It was extra to furnish.
Well, they had to bring in furniture too.
Yeah,
well, they can go to like Rent-A-Center or something.
Exactly, that's what they do. Those people do that
and get the stuff from there. You know, people. The other thing. Well, yes, he got hit with the 4-game suspension, but people are thinking his reputation's tarnished and he still won 4 Super Bowls.
Yeah,
he's
no.
still going to go in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. It's not going to hurt him.
No,
he'll
not.
Be a first ballot Hall of Famer. There's no question.
And there are people that are blind, like the guys that are doing the GoFundMe plan that are blind to it. He could, you know, kill 10 people and he'd still be, you know, perfect in their eyes. So
you mean the GoFundMe? That has now raised $6,676 by 459 idiots?
I think we just... Bob, I'm going to call up in your name and donate a dollar just so I can put you in that...
If you're going to call up my name, then I'll call up Hellboy. Hellboy, $1 million.
Awesome.
You've just ended it. They've got all the money they need.
Yeah, but that's but to get the first round and a fourth rounder, I mean, that is a kick in the butt for the team big time. And it should be, darn it.
Absolutely, it should be. So. You know what? Let's take ourselves a quick break. Now, Marsh... You may know this guy. If not, you know his work because you've been to Hazeltine.
Mm-hmm.
There is a Ryder Cup mural now. Have you seen the mural?
I have not.
At Hazeltine, because it might have. We'll ask him. He is the artist who designed the mural. He's been doing Ryder Cup artwork since 2006.
Wow, I'd like to talk to this guy.
His name is Carl Yeager, and he's a local artist. And he has his stuff is phenomenal. I'll show you during the break how great his stuff is.
Great.
And we'll have Carl give you his website, but I wanted to have him on because we had the guy on a few weeks ago from the, was it Michael,
Hunt. Patrick Hunt.
Patrick Hunt, excuse me. And he knows Patrick quite well. But this is the artist for the Ryder Cup, and he's already got stuff, a mural already at Hazeltine. Not the place where you go if you have a
Hazeltine.
A drug issue. Hazeltine. Hazeltine. So we'll be right back with Carl Yeager.
Now back to the Bob Sansevier Show. Sports Radio 105 The Ticket.
We are back. Marsh Hallberg with us from Hallberg Criminal Defense. Thank you to Marsh. His sports law segment in the last segment brought to you by Smart Start MN Ignition Interlock Systems. If you need to drive, they can help. We are now joined by a man you do not want to play Pictionary with, Carl Yeager, who is the artist for the Ryder Cup, and he's a terrific artist. He's worked on murals and artwork for 20 schools, including, what's the number in Minnesota? I know St. Cloud State, Minnesota Duluth, the Gophers. And have you done Mankato, or how many others in the state have you done, Carl?
Haven't done anything with Mankato. I work with Bemidji State and a lot of other smaller schools around the state.
When did you you did a mural at Hazeltine for the Ryder Cup? How recent was that? I didn't ask you when we spoke about it.
Yeah, it was just a few weeks ago, actually. We each home course for the Ryder Cup gets a ceremonial silver putter that they have on display, and in talking with Hazeltine, they wanted me to design something to go around the putter. So, yeah, we worked it up a few weeks ago, and it looks great.
It does look terrific. Now, Marsh, you've been to Hazeltine, and you go there.
I'm a lowly social member, not a golf member. I've been a social member for 30 years, and for people that, aside from the golf, which is amazing, the building itself, as people may know, Hazeltine had a building back in the 70s that was old, dark, heavy. At the time, it was perfect. It was a big old lodge kind of feel to it. And they literally took the whole thing down, kept some of the big timbers, stripped them back down. And now it's a very, how'd you describe it, Carl? Kind of a Scandinavian, light, contemporary feel to the whole building now.
Yeah, it's one of the most unique clubhouses I've ever been in, and it has a great looking feel to it.
So do you use different mediums? Is this all oil, or are other things you're doing, acrylic and stuff, or what do you work on?
I kind of do everything across the board. I do a lot of colored pencil work. One of the more fun things I do is I do the artwork for the U.S. team for the Ryder Cup every other year. So. And I also do a lot of computer work and creating graphics and murals that, I work with a lot of teams and graphics, just like I did at Hazeltine, where it turns into a full wall mural.
So projects like this, do you come up with concept, you sketch something out, it's on the computer, and then you take it to the guys that are hiring you and go, is this kind of what I'm looking at? Give me some flexibility and I'll run with it? How do you...
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. There's often times when the client has a specific look and feel that they're going for, but a lot of times they throw it at me and say, hey, this is our general idea, and you come up with something.
Now, how many, in talking to Carl Yeager, who has done the artwork that's at Hazeltine now, the mural, and you're not the, quote, official, but you're sort of the unofficial artist for the U.S. Ryder Cup team. Is that the best way to term it?
That's probably the best way to put it. I don't have an official title with them, but I have been lucky enough to do the work for the U.S. team since 2006, and it's one of the more fun things I get to do professionally, and with it being in Minnesota in 2 years, I've been looking forward to this for a number of years, and it's going to be exciting times.
Well, how many pieces of artwork will you do related to the Ryder Cup, based on what you've done? Because your first year was 2006, right?
Correct.
So how many, based on what you've done in past years, how many pieces will you wind up doing related to the Ryder Cup?
Well, that's kind of to be determined. It kind of depends on what the U.S. team wants to do and in their areas, the locker rooms, etc. But the one main one I do is the team poster, they call it, where it's a drawing of the U.S. team and features all the players. So,
and this, and again, what you did is a pencil drawing. I'm just gonna we're gonna give your site is artbyasi.com. I'm going to show this to Marsh. Marsh, you got to take a look at this. Yeah. This is a drawing. It's incredible, isn't it? I mean, for people have to see, we have to get that on the website. The one, just pick any one of the Ryder Cups or anything that Carl has done and put it on Twitter and maybe our Facebook page too, because the work is, when I've looked at some of his stuff, I swear this is a photograph.
Yeah, that looks like a photograph right there.
And it's not.
Self-taught, school, what's your background, Carl?
Self-taught. I did go to college to on an art scholarship, but my my technique is pretty much all self-taught, just throughout the years, trial and error.
So. Now, did your teacher tell you in college you'll never make it as an artist?
in not so many words, yeah. My style of art isn't really what I found ahead at my college, that they wanted to promote. They're more into the expressionist side of art and the abstract side of art, which is fine, but it's just not what I like. I like the realism side and wanted to turn it into a profession, so it was kind of like oil and water with me and my art professors.
Well, one of my best moments and professionally, and Marsh, you may have some of these, and Carl, you may too. First job I ever had, I was working part-time for a weekly newspaper in a place called Manahawkin, New Jersey. And I would do I'd go to council meetings and, you know, these park board meetings. And the guy told me, the editor said, you know, maybe you want to think about something else. So years later, I was a columnist at the Asbury Park Press. I see this guy get out of the elevator. The guy who told me that, he was looking for a job. So I didn't put a word in for him. But to me, that was kind of nice.
And he knew you were still working.
Oh, I was working as a columnist there, and he didn't have a job. So anyway, it reminded me of that, Carl, a little bit, when you have people telling you something like that.
Yeah.
That
okay.
It's just not right for you.
How long, this one that we just looked at, how long did it take you to do this mural, on Hazeltine?
Well, we worked on the design for probably over a span of a couple months. The people I worked with at Hazeltine wanted to make sure, you know, they got a lot of input from a lot of different people, and we wanted to make sure we celebrated the history of the Ryder Cup as well as kind of, feature the captains and, you know, also kind of look towards the future with a lot of the young players that that are on the, you know, hopefully looking to be on the team in 2016.
You know what's to me amazing about this, I talked to Carl about this. When he starts drawing, if he makes a mistake, he can't make a mistake. Yeah. Because it's hard to hide him. How many times have you had to rip something up and start over? Or do you always find a way to not do that?
That hasn't happened in years. So people ask me that all the time. You know, what do you do if you make a mistake? And my answer is I try not to make the mistakes because the penalty is too severe. So my technique is usually pretty slow and, you know, over an extended period of time. So if I see a small mistake happening, I'm able to catch it right away. But I haven't had to rip too many up lately, which is nice.
Now, what would be horrible is you're spending months on something. You're down to the last few strokes. Somebody walks by and hits your elbow. Is that what you probably...
Yeah, that wouldn't go over too well.
Do you work in a cage so that nobody can get near it?
Pretty much. I when it's something important like that, I lock myself in the basement, and my kids know that when they come down, they need to stay a healthy distance away, and they can look over my shoulder, but, yeah.
Well, we're talking to Carl Yeager, who is doing the artwork for the Ryder Cup, has done a number of different pieces of artwork and murals for college teams. You said about 20 college teams, you told me, right, that you've worked
with? Actually quite a bit more than that.
Oh.
Maybe around the country I've worked with 50 different teams or so.
So do you have a piece, like any artist, you have a piece that is your favorite?
I don't have one single piece that's my favorite. I mean, each one, I tend to be my hardest critic, as long as probably my biggest fan. I wouldn't say there's one that I point to as my favorite. I've done a lot of mural work at Ritter Arena for the Gopher women's hockey team that I think really showcase a lot of the recent stuff that I've done that look really good.
Well, I'll just give the background here and then you could amplify it, Carl. What got him really started and getting more acclaim was a piece he did on Tom Lehman, and he went to a mall to show it to him, and Tom fell in love with it. So that piece, now do you have that piece or does Tom have it?
I have that one. I have the original. He has copies of it.
Okay. But I mentioned to Carl, like, we all have moments like that. Had he decided not to go to the mall that night, how his life could have turned out completely different.
Right. You know. Yeah, and this was before Tom was a big name. He was on the PGA Tour, but I was lucky enough to talk to him and with this drawing I did, and we, you know, came to market with the print, and that it wasn't too much later that he won the British Open, which obviously kicked his career off to a great start and also helped launch mine.
And now that was, that was less than 10 years ago, right?
It was 1990.
Oh, I'm sorry.
When I met
my
it.
God,
it
that's
20 years ago.
It's that long ago since he won the Open.
Yeah, it was 96 when he won.
I was thinking 2006 is that's when you first got involved with the Ryder Cup. You were a kid. You weren't even you were, what, 18 at the time, right?
I was in my early 20s when
you met him?
Mm-hmm.
But that's a lot. And how many pieces have you, between then and now, roughly, I know you can't give an exact number, maybe you can, how many pieces have you done?
Hundreds. I couldn't even tell you the exact amount. I've probably forgot half of them that I've done. But yeah, it's in the hundreds.
Now, Carl, I wanted Marsh Hallberg, Hallberg Criminal Defense. The man is, I mean, as an attorney, you have to be an entrepreneur. And he, I'm going to ask Marsh the question, and I've told you this, too. He has never done a T-shirt with his artwork on it. Think of the money this guy could make.
We're there. We take, you know, put a little fine print in your claws when you do the mural that you get to do T-shirts with the mural on it. That would have been a serious moneymaker for you.
See, Carl?
Yeah, might be a winner.
What am I telling you? Even his mom and wife think so, too. Carl, I'm sorry to give you crap about it, but I met Carl last night, and it was great talking to him about the things that he's done. And it's, I mean, I sit back amazed as someone who has trouble with stick figures to look at how intricate the work is. It looks like a photograph, so much of it. It's incredible.
Well, it's a lasting art. Did you, just a quick segue here a little bit, that you got, did you, I know it was in the paper a little bit ago, so I can tell this, but, you know, Charles Schulz being the cartoonist, he'd done decorations in his kid's nursery of Snoopy and Charlie Brown. And the Schulz family ended up buying that. So I know the attorney that owned that home, and I called him up after the article and said, I want to come see these before they're gone. So I invited myself to his house. We sat and had dinner and saw the murals, and they actually came and, you know, chiseled them out.
Funny you should mention that, Carl. Tell him about Charles Schulz.
Yeah, it's another funny segue is that he is my grandma's cousin, is Charles Schulz. So
wow.
That's my one bloodline to another artist is Charles Schulz.
Well, there it is. It's running through. And the interesting thing about that artwork was, like, just like, you know, Mickey Mouse went from Steamboat Willie into Mickey Mouse, these drawings of Snoopy and Charlie Brown looked like them, kind of, but not what they ended up being at the end.
And you know what? Charles Schulz just drew circles with little eyes on it.
This guy's an artist.
Actually, 105 at 105 The Ticket, and also I just at Bob Sansevier, I just retweeted it. Some of the work that Carl Yeager has done for the Ryder Cup. Take a look at it; it's phenomenal. Carl, thank you so much for taking the time with us. It's the stuff you do is magnificent. There's no other way to word to put on it, and I appreciate you taking the time with us.
No problem.
And you're getting your stuff is being retweeted the heck out of already, and it just went up a few minutes ago. T-shirts, Carl, T-shirts.
There you go. That might be the future.
All right, Carl, thanks a lot. Carl Yeager, artist for the Ryder Cup, has done stuff, as he said, more than 50 schools. Terrific artist. And he's a, you know, Minnesota lad. Actually, lives in Buffalo, out where I am. So it's wonderful. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, we'll be joined by another artist of sorts, Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune and Suhan Unfiltered. Jim's segment sponsored by Premier Pool and Spa. We'll be right back. We'll talk to Jim. I got to be honest. I don't know why he'd ever admit to that.
That he broke a hand?
What? And just how it affected him. Doesn't do him any good unless he's looking to find excuses.
Some requirement, Jim, is that don't you tell somebody?
I mean, no, you don't want to be taken out of games,
but
obviously.
But that's really unselfish. That's what I want. Is that what's best for the team? I don't know.
All right, we're joined by Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune and SuhanUnfiltered.com. Jim's segment sponsored by Premier Pool and Spa, which features the Arctic Spa. Built in Canada, the Arctic Spa can handle Minnesota winters. Premier Pool and Spa, they take fun seriously. Jim, I want to talk to you about the Flategate, but I don't know if you heard us talking about Zucker and not the fact that he didn't tell him he had a broken thumb. And I mean, I can see both sides of it. Yeah. He didn't want to be pulled out, but if it affected his game, should he have been? And also, I don't know why he was so honest about it.
I honestly think this is the way it is in the NHL. They're expected to play hurt, and they're not going to tell you anything about the injury until after the season's over. Then they're going to tell you. This happens every year. And I think they know he had a broken thumb.
They had to know something,
They know we've all had problems in sports with your digits being either jammed or broken or a hairline fracture or something like that. Anybody who's played any sport has dealt with that. And frankly, in terms of pain and ability to maneuver, there's really not much difference between a break and a sprain and a jam or all that. I mean, you know, I've had jams that were worse than breaks, and they wanted him on the ice because of his speed and because he might be able to get behind the opposing defense, and they knew he couldn't really shoot well. The thumb was, I didn't see it myself, but third hand, I was told during the playoffs that the thumb was huge and swollen. They knew something was wrong with it. They liked him hurt better than their options for the guys who were healthy scratches.
And that's what I figured. We talked about a little bit earlier that it was better what the other options were. Now, where are you on the Flate? See, I think that the Patriots got a harsher punishment than Brady did.
Well, yes, in the big picture, they probably did. But Brady got, but I think it's more meaningful for Brady. The Patriots have found ways to get around not having a first-round draft pick. $1 million is nothing in that world,
no.
Either Bob Kraft or the Patriots. It'll be a late first-round pick, so it's, while it's not a good thing to lose it, they've dealt with that before. The fourth-round pick is nothing in Belichick's world. He's going to trade for 3 fourth-round picks that draft anyway.
Yeah.
And so it hurts the Patriots, sure. But this is Tom Brady, maybe the greatest quarterback of all time. Maybe. I don't know if he is. It's, you know, there's so many different ways to argue it, but he is in the conversation as the greatest quarterback of all time, coming off a Super Bowl victory that made it really easy for people who like him to argue that he's the greatest quarterback of all time. And he's not only going to miss 4 games in one of his last seasons, he's going to be tainted by this to some degree forever. So, you know, we already knew the Patriots were kind of cheating jerks. Brady had never really been implicated. Now Brady is kind of lumped in with the rest of the cheating jerks.
You know, though, if I had a vote on for the Hall of Fame, it would not give me a moment's hesitation. I don't know that it taints it in the overall picture.
The
body of work. No, but the body of work is what I think people will look at and remember.
There's nothing keeping him out of the Hall of Fame.
No.
All I'm saying is that this is his asterisk. This is what people say, oh, yeah, but. And I'm not even saying I'm going to do that. I'm saying it enabled anybody who wants to attach a negative to an otherwise impeccable career.
Yeah, it's a little more ammo. And by the way, we're also joined by Marsh Hallberg, who I know he has an opinion on everything.
But but Jim is so knowledgeable. I just like to listen to this guy talk sometimes.
Never said that about me, Jim.
No, I
only
haven't.
You.
I've never said that about me.
No. So, as you're sitting there, I was wondering, do you think he's the greatest quarterback of all time? I mean, I know there's so many measurements and arguments you can make, but who quickly comes to the top on that list?
Montana.
The thing about Montana, I love Montana. I covered, you know, a lot of games involving Montana, a lot of Super Bowls and postseason games, and he was brilliant. But the difference there is Montana had the greatest wide receiver of all time. He always had a very good, like, Pro Bowl caliber second receiver. He had great tight ends. He had great running backs. He had a great offensive line. He had a great defense. He had a Hall of Fame coach. So while as great as Montana is, he didn't have to overcome much. Brady has to deal with, he hasn't had great receivers other than the one year he had great receivers, he broke like every record there is with Randy Moss.
Mm-hmm.
Every other year he's had to make do with, you know, a cornerback who was playing wide receiver, or, you know, someone who looks like Julian Edelman, or, you know, Cliff Branch, who couldn't perform well when he went elsewhere. Brady takes crap and makes it gold. And that is remarkable. Even Peyton Manning, who has made a lot of average players look better than they are, he's generally had Pro Bowl or All-Pro caliber receivers to throw to. He's had Marvin Harrison. He's had Demaryius Thomas. He's had Wes Welker. He's had great receivers around him. Tom Brady wins and produces no matter what you give him. And I think that if you want to make the argument, that's the argument.
And you know what? I tend to agree with Jim. I've always said Montana, but I would not argue or listen to the argument for Brady because of what Jim just said.
Yeah.
I mean, he's had, other than the Moss year, which they didn't win, they lost to the Giants, he has had pedestrian receivers.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but
yeah, no,
the thing about that, the only reason they didn't win that Super Bowl, add to Brady's resume and have it be the most remarkable season ever by a quarterback, was because, you know, a guy caught a pass that stuck to his helmet on the following drive. I mean, it wasn't Brady's fault they lost that Super Bowl.
You know what? They should have checked the towels they rubbed those footballs with. I bet they were sticky.
They stuck to the helmet.
I'm thinking something was going on there. No, you're right, though. I haven't really given it, as we're sitting here, I'm thinking about it, and I don't remember any great quarterback who did not have superior receivers for more than one season the way Brady did. Peyton Manning's always had good receivers. I mean, Marvin Harrison was a hell of a receiver, and yep. Reggie Wayne. I mean, these were not receivers who were just raised by that level of play he had.
Right. I mean, and Peyton's great, but that's where, as great as Peyton's numbers are and as great a career as he's had, you look at it and say Peyton's had more advantages, I believe. He also played in a dome for most of his career, which is a much better passing environment than windy Foxborough. And he did not perform as well in postseason, as anywhere near as well in postseason as he did in the regular season. When he had to face a tough defense that was really, you know, and a great defensive coach, they could give Peyton a lot of trouble, where, you know, Brady's faced everything, run every kind of offense, run every kind of, has had every level of talent at receiver, has really not had many good running backs, and has made people around him great.
I'm trying to, other than Corey Dillon, I mean, I don't know that they've always had average running backs who they made work.
Yes.
And that's the one that probably has been the best that he's worked with, right? And it wasn't for but a year or two. He did win a Super Bowl with Dillon, right?
I believe so. Although my memory, I always have to look stuff up. But even Corey Dillon, he ain't going to the Hall of Fame. He's a good back,
no.
But he ain't going to the Hall of Fame. I mean, they went with LeGarrette Blount, the guy who got cut last year.
Yeah, it is. It's when you think about it and what they've done and the teams that they've put together, he has been the one to lift them. Now, he certainly had a pretty good coach, too, but for him, he has been terrific for them. So,
yeah,
Jim, you're...
Belichick is a great coach, but he's really a defensive coach. You know, and take it even further. Brady made Charlie Weiss look like a genius. I mean, I think we just ended the argument. He made Charlie Weiss look like a genius. Nobody else has ever done that.
You're onto something there.
So, Jim, is four the right number? You're Goodell. What's the number of games that you suspend him for?
I might have gone more toward two. It makes the same point. It doesn't penalize the team or the individual quite as much, but you still make the point. But I'll also say this, and as someone who second guesses everybody in power in every sport every day, Goodell was not going to win with this. Mm-hmm. There was no number that would have satisfied everybody. There was no number that was going to satisfy half the people. Goodell's problem at this point is not what he decides on a daily basis now. Goodell's problem is we don't really trust him or like him, and so everything he does from now on we're going to look at askance.
So we talked about it, Jim, Marsh and I. I think it's the four was a number he felt could be upheld not only by an arbitrator but in a courtroom if he had to.
Yeah.
Anything more would have been a problem, and I think it should have been higher, but I think four was a good number that he could justify. Now, are you doing your podcast tonight with Russo?
5 o'clock at Bowl, yes, sir.
All right, and you want to listen into that, and you also can find it, SueHatUnfiltered.com. Read Jim in the Star Tribune, and Jim's segment sponsored by Premier Pool Spa, which features the Arctic Spa. Built in Canada, the Arctic Spa can handle Minnesota winters. Premier Pool and Spa, they take fun seriously. Jim, have a great night tonight with your podcast, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. See you.
All right, take care.
Jim.
We're going to talk to a young man next who is leaving the sunny climes of Southern California tomorrow.
Coming back to 28 wind chill factor this morning. That was a quick thrill you went outside. Woo!
Yeah, it was chilly out, for sure. We'll be joined when we get back to talk a little hockey and a little, we'll ask him about the flake gate, a young man's opinion. Talk to our guy, Jack Jablonski, when we return. We are back. Marsh Hallberg from Hallberg Criminal Defense, HallbergDefense.com, joins us. And we are joined for the final time until, late summer, early?
School's out.
Oh, that's
right. Little Alice Cooper here. We should have school's out for summer.
Early fall by Jack Jablonski. Now, Jack, have you finished packing yet? You're leaving tomorrow to come home, right?
Yes, I am. And everything is packed up now.
Now, is your family out there to help you come home? Or are you, are you doing a lot of this yourself to get ready to come home?
Well, being that I'm paralyzed, I can't do a whole lot myself. So
don't play the paralyzed card with us, Jack. You're a remarkable young man.
Thank you. I've got the parents right here helping pack up.
But that's good.
You going out to LAX?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Now, Jack, I am not going to make the mistake I once made and say to you what?
I can't get off your ass.
Yes, I will never say that to you again. Do that and what are you talking about?
So how did finals go?
They went well. I don't know the grades yet, but I'm pretty confident I did well. And we'll find out in the next few days.
That's a good feeling to know you felt you did well with it. And I know you would have gotten the A+ if you won with the AP idea I gave you for your journalism class. But Jack doesn't listen to me.
That's okay.
he's a young maverick is what I think he is.
Maverick.
Now, Jack, let me ask you this. I wanted to let's just talk a little bit of hockey, and then we'll go back to talking about coming home because I want to get you in there whenever you've settled yourself and gotten comfortable. Who can beat the Blackhawks? Anaheim? Do you think Anaheim will wind up winning, or will it be the Blackhawks playing for the Stanley Cup?
I think Anaheim. I really think that with the size and the strength and still with the ability to score. I think that, from top to bottom in a longer series, I don't look at this one going 4 or 5 games, but I think overall, they've only played nine games in the playoffs so far. Obviously Chicago's played 10, but, so it's not that big of a difference, but you've got to look at strength and the size and the core of team players that they've been able to produce and keep healthy as well.
See, what's interesting, after having seen them sweep the Wild, you know, that team just looked like it was
invincible.
So tough.
Invincible.
And I'm not going to argue with you, because you're out there, so you've been following Anaheim certainly more closely than anyone here has.
Yeah, no question, and I would agree. You know, the one thing Chicago did very well was when they had a lead, they were able to hold it. You know, the Wild never led in the series, which is quite depressing from a Minnesota standpoint. But you look at the way they were able to shut the Minnesota Wild down and limit scoring chances. But I think with the speed of, you know, you've got Cogliano, who's debatably the fastest player in the league on Anaheim, and the strength and size of Perry and Maroon and Getzloff on that top line, that's going to give especially the second half of that D-core in Chicago some trouble that, you know, they didn't necessarily face against Minnesota or even Nashville.
And you know what, Jack, the most impressive thing about the sport that you love is you cannot deflate a puck. And also,
no,
I mean,
you
really
can't deflate the puck.
Can you doctor a puck? I mean, what if you chipped it up a bit, like, you know, if you scuffed up a baseball? There's really not much you can do to a puck to make it, you know, do much. It, well, that's not very obvious anyway. You cut it in half.
Well, there's nothing. I mean, obviously, because you play with the same puck as the same team, you know, you can't.
Yeah, different. Good point.
You can't really, you know, alter it for your advantage. The only thing you can do is, you know, hit it so hard that it ends up off a pipe and splitting it in half, which happens, you know, every so often and, you know, rare occasions, but there's nothing you can do to deflate a puck in that case.
No, they wind up just replacing the puck. How about
exactly.
That? If every time the puck's turned over, stop! If you're the puck you like hitting.
Yeah,
that'd be 12-hour games. That wouldn't work too well.
No, not at all. It's an interesting case. I think that they really put the hammer down on Brady and the Patriots.
Too. See, I think Brady got off easy. I thought it should be more, but we've talked about this, Jack. I also think, and I think Marsh and I concur, 4 was the number that they could uphold. They could justify it and argue it to an arbitrator and to a court if it gets into a courtroom. So that seems to be a number that works.
I would agree, and I think, you know, it's not too little. Obviously, we know that Goodell and the Ray Rice situation was a little light on the initial 2-game suspension for that case. And I think by putting a superstar, you know, who hasn't dealt with, you know, the legal issues that necessarily AP and Ray Rice have dealt with, I think it's a good number because, you know, it still leaves them the season to make an impact, but at the same time, you know, punish him for his wrongdoing.
Now, Jack, you come back tomorrow. Anytime you figure when you feel that you've, I don't forget, jet lag or whatever it is, but let us know when you want to come in and spend the day with us, because that'd be fun.
For sure. Yeah, no, I think next week at some point I'd love to stop in and hang out with you guys for the show. And Bob will talk about the future, and hopefully I can get more involved with you guys.
That'd be great.
I'll heckle you a little bit more than 15 minutes every other day.
Well, Jack, we're looking forward to it. Love to, you know, to see you again in studio. And if you want, I mean, any pick any day, but if you want to come in on Tuesdays, I'm sure Marsh won't mind.
We'll double-team Bob then. That'll be our plan.
You guys have worked well together in the past.
Yeah,
it'll be fun. Well, Jack, have a safe trip home. And now, are you driving back or flying back?
I'll be flying back. We have my car out here, but we should put that on a truck, and that's on its way back to Minnesota right now.
So. Oh, okay, so it probably will beat you here.
Maybe. I'm not sure what the exact date is, but it's a 4-hour flight, so I'll be home at 10 o'clock tomorrow night.
All right, well, we look forward to seeing you when you can get in. Again, have a safe trip. Say hello to your parents, and Jack, we'll certainly be talking to you about hockey as we go forward here, and many other things. Because you, for a young man, you certainly know your sports, all of them, not just hockey.
Thanks,
see you
Bob.
Soon, Jack. All right. Take care, man.
All right, take care, Jack.
See you guys.
Take care. Martin with Marsh Hallberg. It's always great when you come in on Tuesdays and hang out. It's fun having you here.
Thank you.
It makes having Hellboy here tolerable.
Yeah, I know, Hellboy. I don't know.
That's tough. That's a really tough job.
Yeah.
Making me tolerable.
Somebody's going to try to do it anyway. It doesn't always work. Now, Marsh, we are in concurrence, though, right about this. I think they could have gone harder, but they didn't on the deflate gate.
Yeah, that's gonna be. This isn't gonna play. This isn't gonna have the legs that AP's case had. But
And speaking of that, now, Hellboy, what was the number on Patriot fans who were basically escorted out of the NFL office? They were arrested.
They were arrested. There was four or five of them. I think there was just four. It was tough to see. There was a bunch of different vines.
This happened,
today?
Last hour or so? Or?
Yeah, it happened this afternoon.
Okay. And they were handcuffed themselves inside the NFL offices.
They're allowed to pick it around out on the sidewalk, but the second they went in and sat down and handcuffed themselves in there. That's trespassing now.
Other than, you know, as opposed to the president of the university, it's different here. People just barge into his office and hung out.
Right.
These people, you do it at the NFL offices, they're going to have you arrested.
Yeah. Private property.
So that was not quite the brightest thing these guys.
Get a life.
Well, I mean, you know what? I guess they all called in sick for work that day.
Okay,
and let me give you this update. It's 518 people. They have raised $7,430 of the $1 million that the Patriots have been fined. The Patriot fans are trying to raise the $1 million to help a billionaire pay off his contest.
We should figure like the final number will be on a certain date. You know, like
actually
$15,000. I'll go $15,000.
I think that it'll dwindle over the next couple of days. It's all excitement now, but people aren't. This is not a flooding when you're at 7430 and it's gone 22 hours.
Well, like I said,
we'll check it tomorrow.
Yeah.
Patriots should take that money and donate it to charity.
Oh, they nice touch.
Oh, I would bet you better.
Yeah.
It'd be crazy
if they
didn't.
Give it to Tom Brady.
Give it to Brady, because he's losing money, too. Thank you to Marsh Hallberg and Hallberg Criminal Defense, HallbergDefense.com. Hellboy, you're my guy. That young man in there did one hell of a job. A shout-out to him for all those Hazeltine.
Good job, Zach.
Zach, you did a hell of a job getting those photos out there on 105, at 105, the ticket. You're going to turn things over to Superstar Mike Morris and Ben Holson. They'll be with you till 7. We'll be with you tomorrow. See you later.
Or disappear into the potter's ground. When the man comes around.
The only pure sports talk station in the Twin Cities.